work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Shoot, they score!
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We had Patrick Crosby score!
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make a bleed for it, and we did.
He doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks. No player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien pulls it in!
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Back in toward the corner from where it came by Hellebuck. Back toward the line now for Hanson. Wrist shot, he scores! Yannick Hanson, a laser beam wrist shot from the point. And it's 2-1 Vancouver.
You know what they say, you can only hope to control Yannick Hanson. You can't hope to stop him. The Winnipeg Jets were unable to do anything of the sort last night in Vancouver, dropping a 4-1 decision to the Vancouver Canucks, failing to win yet again, failing in their quest to win three games in a row. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca, we welcome you to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. On my left, representing Rowdy Piper, Ezra Ginsberg.
Yeah, rest in peace, Rowdy Piper, yeah. One of my all-time favorites.
Oh, yeah.
You know about his ties to Winnipeg, right?
Yeah, he's from Winnipeg.
I think he's actually from Saskatoon, and he spent grew his formative here. Years in yep. Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Yeah, but of course...
the Hot Rod.
Hot Rod, yeah. So yep. you're you know, I'm glad you're wearing a t-shirt and not a kilt, because, well, we'll get into that a little bit later on in the
and,
show.
And I can also play bagpipes as well.
Yeah, well,
no, you can. Come on.
No, I can't.
He definitely can't. He's 0% chance. And the other voice you hear is that of Sean Assor. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And also the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news, of course, is IllegalCurve.com.
The Jets could have used the hot rod on the ice last night in that second and third period, Drew.
The Jets could have used something. Maybe some smelling salts, maybe some energy.
Rowdy Piper temper.
Yeah, a little. Maybe exactly, you know, with... It was a bad performance again. We start, of course, with last night in Vancouver. It was a bad performance by the Winnipeg Jets after coming off of two straight home ice victories against the Florida Panthers and then a dominant effort over the Colorado Avalanche on Sunday afternoon. You go to Vancouver to play a Canucks team that isn't very good. Jets should beat that Vancouver team on paper. But yet again, as we've seen so many times with this Winnipeg Jets team, when an opportunity is there for the taking, they simply pass it up, and it's one step forward, two steps back for this team, the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, Drew, and because they were so good on Sunday afternoon against the Colorado Avalanche, you really thought that the Jets had the momentum, the positive energy in the room, and a really good chance to win their third game in a row for the first time this year, right?
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, they played, I think, a good first 25, 27 minutes of that game. But after Yannick Hanson scored that goal, first of two goals, mm-hmm. I mean, the Winnipeg Jets did not play very well. They got badly outchanced. I thought they were just outworked, lost a lot of those individual battles. And I thought Jacob Markstrom, quite frankly, outplayed Connor Hellebuck. Now, Drew, I don't think Connor Hellebuck had a bad game. I would say that only one of those three goals was his fault. And, you know, when you're talking about Sven Berchi's breakaway goal, you know, Dustin Byfuglien coughs up the puck at the blue line, the Canucks blue line, and Sven Berchi puts a beautiful move on Connor Hellebuck. So that's not the goal I'm talking about. If anything, you know, the goal that he should have had back is Yannick Hanson's second goal. So
the one that we just played off the top where it was a, you know, a wrist shot with a little bit of traffic in front. But, I mean...
Well, Sedin's in front of the net there with Scheifele. And I'm not going to fault Connor Hellebuck completely, but you got to track that puck better.
You have to fight through the screen, and that's what he hasn't done, I think, a lot this year. And maybe that's a function of a young goalie learning how to be an NHL goaltender. But I think that's been a significant drawback is that his fight to see the puck, his fight to battle through the screens. There's been a number of goals that you know have been from long shots from the point. Not all, you know, where there's been a bit of a screen and he hasn't been able to fight through it enough to make the save.
And Sean, Connor Hellebuck was not the problem in this game. It was once again, the Jets came out firing in that first period. Well before Blake Wheeler's goal, the Jets had all of the possession and zone time in the Canucks zone. It was once again, the Jets took the foot off of the gas in the second period and let the Canucks back into the game and didn't play the same way. They continue to play one or two good periods of hockey and can't put together three consecutive periods.
Yeah, you actually took the words right out of my mouth. They took their foot off the gas. They score in the first period. Blake Wheeler on the power play, a great play. We've seen him do that numerous times up the left side of the ice. You
miracle
know.
Of all miracles.
I know. He catches Alex Biega a little bit flat-footed. Biega turns the wrong way. Wheeler gets the angle. Beautiful goal. No complaints there. They were controlling the play in the first period, and then something happened where it was almost as if they got a little too overconfident in themselves, and they just kind of backed off, and they allowed the Canucks to kind of claw their way back in momentum-wise, and then Yannick Hansen scores two in a row, and it was as if they were shell-shocked. They figured, well, it was this, we should be beating this team, and we're not beating this team. So, and then the panic and the, you know, holding the sticks a little tighter and a little bit of confusion with coverages.
I thought they made it easy on Vancouver. I mean, you look at that game, and yeah, they had a decent first period.
Mm-hmm.
So they get marks for that. And if they had played that way for all 60 minutes, they're probably the victors at the end of the game. I thought they made the second and third periods very easy on Vancouver.
And there were a lot of similarities, guys, between this game and the game 2 weeks ago at home against Detroit, when the Jets were utterly dominant in that first period, up 3-1, and then the Red Wings scored that goal. I believe it was Thomas Vanek on that tip that got that 3-2 goal, and then Detroit tied it up later, and then they won in the shootout there. But I thought, you know, for a good portion of the first half of that game, the Jets controlled it just like they did in Vancouver. And the good news is, guys, they get to play Vancouver once again. But this is a team below you in the standings that isn't very good. I tweeted it out yesterday. I mean, aside from Colorado, I think Vancouver might be the second worst team in the entire West. I mean, throw in Arizona in there. I mean, they're not a good team, Drew.
No.
And after that Sedin line.
But the Jets made them look good. That's what's so damning about the Jets' performance is that Vancouver got full marks for the win because they played a better game than the Jets did.
Right, and, you know, you can throw in, you know, that late power play that the Jets had, and Patrick Laine hits the post, Nikolaj Ehlers had a good chance, Mark Scheifele had a point-blank chance. But, Drew, you're right. I mean, would've, could've, should've, right? And at this point, they need the points, and, you know, I agree. I mean, it's not good enough at this point. And, you know, I think we have a clip of Paul Maurice that we wanted to play. Paul Wiesek of the Winnipeg Free Press asked Paul Maurice about the consistency and the fact that the Jets haven't been able to put three consecutive good periods together.
This is from just after practice today. The Jets practiced in Vancouver ahead of tomorrow night's rematch. So this is Paul Maurice talking about the Jets' inconsistency.
Yeah, I've got a fairly detailed idea of what happens. And when you look at our first periods, our willingness to play a certain style of game is strong. If we could extend that number over three, we might be the best defensive team in the National Hockey League. But it's hard, and it's taxing, and we get into the second period. Now there are some things off line changes that loosen the game up in the second period. It's why in the overtime they switch ends. There are some technical things that we need to be better at, but the order of business there would be turnovers, shift length. Penalties would be the cumulative reasons, part of the cumulative reasons why we're not as strong in the second. So developing that mindset and the identity of our group is a real challenge for us, and it's one we're focused on.
A complicated problem, no quick fix then.
Well, a complex problem. Yeah.
Doesn't strike me as being that complex. I'm not sure. I mean, all due respect. Your issues in the second period are because of shift length, turnovers, and penalties? Shift length? Take shorter shifts. I mean, each team has the long change. It's not like just one of the two teams has a long change there. I mean, this team has been together, you know, with the exception of, you know, Patrick Laine, this team's been together for a long time now. 35 games into the season. Plus however many, you know, seasons before. These are solvable problems. These are problems that if there was a solution, this coaching staff would have found it by now. That's a weak excuse from the coach there.
And guys, we're 35 games into the season now, and the Jets are being outscored by a 2-1 ratio. I think it's 48 goals allowed to 23 goals for, something like that.
In the second period.
In the second period.
Yeah, 48 to 23.
48 to 23. So when you're looking at that second period, I mean, this is not an anomaly, Drew. This is something, it's not a coincidence. This is something that has been going on the entire year. We talked about it a couple weeks ago against the Red Wings. They weren't very good in the second period.
Sure.
They weren't very good against Calgary last weekend in Calgary. Remember, they gave up the four goals. So, I mean, the second period here, guys, I mean, whether it's simple or complex, I tend to think that it is a little bit more complex than just one or two things. I mean, is it, you know, a bit of a young team here that isn't able to sustain the way they play, you know, early on in games? Perhaps. Is it a little bit of turnovers and penalties? Maybe. But the Jets got to figure this out here because, you know, there are other teams that are just nipping at their heels. Dallas and Nashville, you know, through, you know, 30-plus games are not playing very well right now. We're going to talk about Dallas later, Drew.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to think that these teams are going to start to pick it up, you know, pretty soon, if not in the next week or two, and the Jets have to figure this out because they can't use this as an excuse anymore.
Let me tell you this, Azzy. Let me ask you this. I mean, you watched that game last night, and you've seen the second period troubles and everything else, you know, ad nauseum. The effort isn't the same. The effort after the first period dropped significantly.
Right, and that makes you think that maybe the way they're playing in the first 10 or 15 minutes is not sustainable throughout a game.
Then that can't be your style. Then that can't be, if it's not sustainable for 60 minutes, then that can't be your style. Because having a style that only leaves you successful for 15 minutes out of in a 60-minute game, that's not a style. That's a recipe for disaster. You would have to change your style if you can't play at the appropriate level for 60 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's what Paul Maurice was kind of alluding to when he kind of paused there and went, it's taxing. I think he meant it's taxing on his players. You know, they play with intense speed and physicality, and I bet it just wears them down as that period goes on, and it takes them a little while to regain the wind, which is unacceptable because they're professionals and
if they play so hard for the first 15 minutes of the game that they've got nothing left in the tank, that they absolutely are spent for the last 45 minutes of the game, well, that can't be a style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't buy that.
And, you know, we've had an article written by Dave Manuk on the site about how these Jets have been Jekyll and Hyde, more so home versus away. They've been certainly way better at home, and we saw that with the way they played Sunday afternoon against Colorado versus the way they played last night against Vancouver. But, I mean, you're talking, I mean, if you watch that game, guys, last night in that first period.
If you managed to watch it without falling asleep.
But specifically, you know, the first period, because we're talking about, you know, this type of play not being sustainable. You know, you look at that Ehlers-Shifley-Line-A line, and even that second line, Perreault, Little, and Wheeler, and then even the third line with Dano, Patan, and Stafford, I mean, they were fast, they were quick, there was a lot of forechecking, there was a lot of good pressure. I mean, Vancouver couldn't get anything going in their own zone. And then in the second period, after, I'd say, maybe the 7 or 8 minute mark,
it just
disappeared. It was like, you know, all of a sudden Houdini appeared. And then disappeared.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, I don't know. I have trouble believing it's the style that is the problem with the Winnipeg Jets. I think it's a function of, I don't know, maybe immaturity isn't the right word, but, you know, if you have to play at this level, if level X is the level you need to play at to win games, and you play at that level and then you stop playing at that level, I don't think it's style-based. I don't think it's, you're so exhausted. I don't see them playing a style that exhausts them after 15 minutes.
Call it whatever you want, though, Drew. I mean, we watch this team every single day.
Yeah.
And the way they're playing right now, and we've seen this whole have a good first period, have a bad second period. We saw it earlier in the season when the Jets came back from those three-goal deficits in the third period. The way they're playing, especially in the defensive zone, and I'm not talking about specifically Buff turning the puck over, more so on the first goal, even when Janik Hansen finds that hole in the slot.
Sure. And Adam Lowry loses them.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to be better, and they have to take care of those details in their game because it's costing them games.
Look, they were terrible in the third period also. They didn't start to play well in the third period until it was a 3-1 game and they got a power play.
Well, that's even more reason why they can't expect to always have those three-goal third periods like they've had earlier in the season, right? So
this was the Vancouver Canucks were the better of the two teams.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the two teams on paper, and based on talent and based on skill, the Jets are the better of the two teams. It means that either the effort was lacking or the Canucks got lucky, quote unquote.
It's also a very fragile team. I mean, that's one of the only ways I can explain the way the Jets play in the first period versus the way they play for the rest of the game.
Right. They can't handle adversity. If there's adversity, they wilt in the face of it. And I mean, let's be honest. Vancouver wasn't, you know, didn't win that game because of luck last night. Vancouver won that game last night because they were the better of the two teams. So the Jets, the more talented team, couldn't get as much talent to perform on the ice.
And Jacob Markstrom was very good, guys.
Was he very good?
I thought he was.
He made some big saves. He made some big saves.
I mean, he was better than Hellebuck, but was he? Did he steal that game? I don't think he stole that game.
He got one of the stars, so he was obviously...
He was a good player.
Sure.
But I don't think he stole that game.
I didn't say he stole the game.
I know you didn't.
But I just said that was part of it. You know, we've seen that, you know, in the past, and, you know, we saw that with Detroit. I thought that Connor Hellebuck was outplayed in the Red Wings game as well.
Sure.
Peter Mrazek was very good. Didn't necessarily steal it, but he was clearly a better goalie in that game.
Well, look, I think clearly last night, and the Jets, the Vancouver players, the less talented Vancouver players, outperformed the more talented Winnipeg Jets players. And that's a damning statement about the performance the Jets put forward last night.
I would agree with that. And, you know, again, glass half full, pardon me, you know, looking at it as an optimist. I mean, the Jets have another opportunity tomorrow night to win, and they can go into the Christmas break having won three of their last four games.
My glass is empty and bone dry because it's been 6 years.
I think they win tomorrow.
Okay. I mean, you know, I hope they do. As a fan of the team or whatever else I am, you know, I have no confidence that they're going to, because I have no reason to believe that this team is, in the face of adversity, going to stand up.
By the way, just because they win tomorrow doesn't mean they still don't have to go on a winning streak. I mean, they're going to have to come.
Oh, they need to go.
We
on
said
a
it.
Streak.
We yeah. said it they when they it. After the heading into the Florida game that they needed, and then in the seven games between the Florida game and the Islanders game on New Year's Eve, they could afford one loss.
Well, when you have the Minnesota Wild winning eight games in a row,
they could afford. They had 14 games there, or they had 14 points up for grabs there, and they needed at least 12, and maybe you could make the argument that 11. Well, guess what? That was assuming you were going to win both Vancouver games, because now you're going to either have to steal a game against the Blackhawks, or you're going to have to steal a game against the Blue Jackets, two teams that are heads and shoulders better than you are. We'll find out. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets' forward lines. The forwards are now healthy. Is it time to see Armia and Mathias back in the lineup? You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
As Armia across the line makes it inside out, that move gets it, he scores! Wins a one-on-one battle as Johnny Oduya slams the stick over the crossbar and breaks it in frustration.
To center, Mathias after it again with Hamilton. Mathias dives, gets up, Sean Mathias scores! Oh, you won't see a prettier goal than that!
The Jets hope that Sean Mathias and Joel Armia can make sweet music as they return to health and potentially to the Winnipeg Jets lineup tomorrow night against the Vancouver Canucks. Welcome back to NHL This Week, 10 minutes before the top of the hour. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So Nick Patan got back in the lineup on Thursday night with Chris Thorburn going back up into the press box. Pretty standard. Nobody really would have a surprise or with that one.
Well, no, that's why the Jets lost. It was because Thorbs was in the press box.
Right. I forgot about that.
I'm just trying to get people going on Twitter.
I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. It's called trolling. I'm well aware of what you're doing. Armia and Mathias didn't get into the lineup on Tuesday night. Both skated for yet another day wearing the normal contact jerseys, full contact, no injury concerns with those guys. Would you expect to see one or both of them in the lineup tomorrow night as the Jets and the Canucks meet in the second game of this two-game series?
Yeah, Drew, and it's a tough question to answer because Paul Maurice said today, kind of, you know, almost a little bit tongue-in-cheek, was saying that, you know, of course there's a chance that one of them or both of them play, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I would expect it to be one. If it's going to be either one or two, I mean, I think it's going to be one just because I don't think that they want to have two guys coming out of the lineup. That's just pure speculation at this point. But I think when you're talking about Joel Armia and Sean Mathias, guys who have been out of the lineup for quite some time now, they were very effective on a line with Adam Lowry, that third line for the Jets. But we'd most likely expect them to play on that fourth line. So if you're going to have two of them coming back into the lineup, you have to keep in mind that means someone has to be sent down.
You would have to, yes, right.
Because right now you've got Burmistrov, Thorburn, and Stewart in the press box.
You had one open roster spot,
right,
which allowed you to activate Patan,
right,
and move Thorburn to the press,
right,
box.
So
the
as,
press box.
As soon as one player is activated, someone has to be sent down to the Moose.
Or and, put on IR if there's an injury,
right,
we don't know about. But
right,
mean, that,
and,
that doesn't seem to be the case.
And the guess of mine would probably be that it would be one of Andrew Kopp, Nick Patan, or Marco Dano. And your guess is as good as mine as far as Nick Patan goes. Do you want Nick Patan playing on the fourth line of the Jets, or do you want Nick Patan playing on the first line of the Moose? Also, we have to consider that the Moose are off for 10 days.
Sure. Let me ask you guys this, Sean, I'll let you get in on what you, you know, is it time, if those guys are healthy, and they have been, you know, they sound like they were healthy on Sunday against the Avalanche, and they were healthy last night against the Canucks. Have you, is it time now? Would you agree with getting them into the lineup, getting at least one of them into the lineup? Have you seen enough from the other 12 current forwards that would say, that would tell you, no, they don't need to make any changes to the forward group right now?
Well, Sean, I actually thought Kopp, Lowry, and Tanev was a decent line for the Jets last night. I'm not saying that they, you know, exactly lit it up, but I'm just saying I think they've been pretty solid here, and the lines, the third and fourth lines, have changed quite a bit. So of the top two lines, with Blake Wheeler dropping down to the second line to play with Brian Littledrew, but I mean, in a short type of answer, I would expect neither of them to play tomorrow, and you wait until after the Christmas break. And like I said,
so you would keep. So hang on, I'm surprised to hear you say that, but I just want to make sure I'm hearing it correctly. You would keep status quo, the lines the same 12 forwards that played on Tuesday. You would have them play on Thursday.
Either one of those guys can bring energy to the Jets. And, you know, when you're talking about a guy like Sean Mathias, he's got a scoring touch. He scored 18 goals a couple of years ago. He's good on the PK. Joel Armia is a guy that maybe hasn't established himself offensively at the NHL level, but he's also a guy that has that defensive edge to his game. He's got that physical aspect of his game. So, I mean, they can add different elements to the Jets, but I don't think they're going to be difference makers for the Jets, put it that way. I mean, the Jets as a whole have to be better, and that starts with the leaders of this team, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler. I mean, sure, Blake Wheeler scored the first goal of the game, but the point is that it's going to be the big boys for the Jets that are the difference in this game. So, again, you know, we might see Joel Armia or Sean Mathias back, but I wouldn't expect it. And if it is one of those two, I'm probably putting Joel Armia back into the game. Mm-hmm. But then again, Drew, that means if you're activating one of those guys off of IR, then you have to send someone down. So Nick Patan, Andrew Kopp, you know, I wouldn't expect it to be Marco Dano, but we'll see. But
potentially Alex Burmistrov, if you're not worried about losing him on waivers for nothing, because he would, of course, be waiver eligible.
There is a roster freeze right now, so I don't know how that works, but
that's a good point too.
I was going to ask about the roster freeze. I believe it's in place.
It is in place right now until after Christmas.
Exactly.
I'm not sure what exactly. Maybe they're. I wonder if that prevents you from activating a player off IR, but I don't think that would be it. Maybe you're allowed to, maybe they expand the rosters. You're allowed an expansion of the rosters for this. I guess it's really only one game.
That might be even more reason that they just stay with the current lineup.
That's an interesting point, and I'd have to look into the actual the nuts and bolts regarding the roster freeze as it pertains to players coming off the injured list. Sean, what would you do?
I just want to ask a question. Has the versatility of Andrew Kopp maybe solidified himself a roster spot? He can move from wing to center. You know, he's kind of showed a little bit more of a scoring touch this year.
Unless your name is Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Brian Little, Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine, I don't think anything you've done has solidified you any sort of roster spot.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, I mean, Matthew Perreault has been a little bit better since he's come back from injury.
I think he's benefited from playing with guys
with Wheeler and
little guys that kind of get the game
a little Stafford
faster.
Continues to struggle.
Well, I was going to say, what about number 12?
He
had a good game. He looked better. I'll say better yesterday.
He's been struggling.
He's got one goal this year.
He's been struggling, and that's being nice to say that he's been struggling. But everybody else in the Jets bottom, you know, everybody else besides the quote-unquote big five, hasn't wowed me enough to think that they should feel safe in their role.
Well, and right there, that might be a reason for Paul Maurice to say, hey, we really need to win this game. Let's put Joel Armia back there, or let's put Sean Mathias back in the lineup and take someone else out. But I mean, I mean, we're speculating at this point, Drew, but certainly, I mean, the secondary scoring has not been very good this year. But when you're looking after the Christmas break, there are going to be hard decisions for Kevin Cheveldayoff and Paul Maurice to make, Drew, because whether it's Andrew Kopp, Marco Dano, Nick Petan, I mean, I think you can make an argument for each one of these players to remain with the Jets. I think Marco Dano has shown a lot of signs of improvement this year. Nick Petan, you know, he just came back. He's only played one game here after missing the previous 10, but I thought he actually looked pretty good out there, you know, even strengthened on the power play. So, I mean, someone's got to go down, though. So there are only so many spots, and as we mentioned, as soon as you activate Armia and Mathias off of the IR, they have to send two guys down.
Yeah, and that is that is the question that you know.
It's in question.
It's in question. I mean, that's the problem. Let's hit the break. Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province is going to join us. We'll talk more about the Canucks Jets series that's occurring on the left coast. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 12.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past the top of the hour, we welcome you back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Sean Assor with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Best way to reach us in studio as well. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from the Vancouver province, our good friend Ed Willis. Ed, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. Happy holidays to you.
Yeah, best to you and yours, guys.
Thank you, Ed. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Canucks and the Jets as they are in the midst of this rare two-game, you know, homestand series, very baseball-esque sort of. You know, before we get into last night's game, you know, what are your thoughts on maybe this becoming more of a thing in the NHL where a road team plays a couple games in a row in a specific city?
Well, Tim Campbell and I have had a laugh about this because back in the day when I first started covering the Jets in the early 90s, they'd go down to L.A., but they'd play like a Tuesday and a Thursday or a Wednesday and Friday. Mm-hmm. And it was the same when L.A. went to Winnipeg. They'd usually play a Friday and a Sunday afternoon. Now, guess who got the better of that deal? Getting out of a Winnipeg winter and spending 5 days in Los Angeles was one of the great treats of covering the Jets. So that was there. And I don't know. This is like just such a one-off. And nobody has given me a real reason why it's taken place. So it's crazy because, you know, they're in the same conference and they're going to play each other twice in Vancouver and they're within 2 days of each other. So I don't know. Maybe, sure, yeah, I guess. It's kind of weird for me, though.
Well, you know, Ed, we've spent the first – it's weird for all of us, I think. Everyone's a little – saw the schedule and was like, well, this is a little bizarre. Is this a typo? But whatever it is. We'll see if it becomes a regular thing in the NHL. You know, we spent the first, you know, 35 or so minutes of our program talking about last night's game. And I wanted to get it from your perspective. And, I mean, not so much the Canucks' performance, but I wanted your perspective on the Jets' performance. And, you know, obviously you have strong ties to Winnipeg, having, you know, worked here and covered Jets 1.0 for so many years. But, you know, we've been watching this team close all season long, and of course we've watched them, you know, for the last 6 years. What was your perspective of the Jets' performance last night in that Vancouver victory?
Well, the Reader's Digest version is they were terrific for the first 22 minutes. They absolutely dominated the game. And then something flipped, and I still can't identify what it was. But I think the Sedins had a couple of good shifts. And when Yannick Hansen tied the game, the Canucks, and believe me, the Canucks are not an offensive juggernaut by any stretch of the imagination. They'd had 7 shots on goal. And then Hansen tied the game. And I really, for the last 38 minutes, the Canucks dominated. And the Canucks don't dominate teams. They're kind of scrappy, and they stay close and try and find a win. But, you know, for me, that was one of their better performances of the year.
You know, Ed, you mentioned Yannick Hansen gets the game-winning goal, picks up a pair of goals against the Winnipeg Jets. Sven Berchi got that beautiful breakaway goal after Dustin Byfuglien's shot was blocked. Sven Berchi's a guy who was cast off by the Calgary Flames. Is he kind of flying under the radar, and he's really turned out, you know, to be a steal for this Canucks team?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. The jury is very much still out, and I've written this a couple of times. It's like Sven Berchi is almost like the plebiscite on Jim Denning's regime here, because he was the kind of player. I mean, he was an undervalued asset. He was the 13th player taken overall. The Canucks got him for a second round draft pick. So I mean, he's not first round skill. Anybody can see that. And you see it in glimpses, but can he do it over an 82-game schedule? Can he be that difference maker more often than not? He was a healthy scratch about a week ago, and he's back in the lineup. He's actually been pretty good for about a month now. So it's an interesting one, because he would change a lot of things for the Canucks going forward if he turned into a legitimate top six forward, a 25-goal, 55-point guy.
Ed, I was listening to head coach Willie Desjardins, his scrum yesterday afternoon, and there was an interesting little tidbit where he's talking about defenseman Troy Stetcher and how he was so surprised at, you know, the progress he's made, and he didn't think he'd even be able to maybe crack the lineup, let alone be as successful as he's been. You know, 19 minutes, 24 seconds ice time yesterday, a plus two. Yep. What's this been guy like to watch this season? He's kind of, you know, started under the radar.
Yeah, he's found money for the organization. He's an undrafted free agent, played in the national championship team in the University of North Dakota. He wasn't the most coveted of the undrafted free agents to come out of UND, but he showed up at training camp, and he's just played his way into a regular spot here. It's like I said, it's a terrific story, and you don't expect those kind of players to make that kind of impact. But again, he's a smaller defenseman. He's a puck mover. You think Tyson Barrie. Think of the kid Spurgeon in Minnesota. They're similar type players, but he just seems to have the ability to defend in his own end as an undersized guy. Great puck mover, and he's really helped the power play at all. He has the ability to shoot the puck and get his shot through, and that, as you know, is a very valuable skill in the NHL. Mm-hmm.
Ed Willis is our guest on NHL This Week. Ed's a columnist with the Vancouver Province. Ed, you know, Sean mentioned Willie Desjardins in the previous question, and he's been, I think the word would be, embattled. And there's been a lot of people who've been, you know, watching Willie Desjardins, watching the Canucks, and thinking that every loss that this team suffers is going to be the one that cost Desjardins his job. You know, under any other head coach, is this Canucks team much different, you know, record-wise than they currently are? I mean, you know.
No. Oh,
there
no,
you go.
No. Let me cut you off right there.
Please.
No, they play for him. The plain fact is they are under-talented. They've got, basically four American leaguers, or three American leaguers playing on their fourth line. They've got an undrafted college kid, you know, playing 20, 22 minutes a lot of nights. So, you know, they play for him. So, you know, I think the Willie watch is really over until about March. He's got a four-year contract. They're not going to gas him now. I think, you know, they've kind of righted the ship here a little bit since Chris Tanev came back. And Chris Tanev isn't a sexy player, but in the Canucks world, he's very valuable. He settles things down. He's kind of that steady Eddie guy on the back end. And they've got, they've got 7 points out of 8 since Tanev has been back. So he's made a difference. They're going to go with Willie until March and maybe even until the new year, but I don't see anything happening in the immediate future there.
Ed, Jacob Markstrom and Ryan Miller have split the starts for the Canucks this year, and I thought Jacob Markstrom was very good for the Canucks last night. Yeah. He picked up one of the three stars. Ryan Miller's in the last year of his contract. He's making $6 million a year. Jacob Markstrom's got 3 years left on his contract at $3.66 million a year. We know who's going to get protected there. Do you expect Ryan Miller to be traded before the trade deadline?
It's possible. It depends how badly a team like LA would want him. I can see some fits, and I can see, you know, a team wanting an insurance guy. And Ryan Miller's been good. His problem is he can't stay healthy at this stage of his career. The Canucks' goaltending should be the least of their problems going forward. They got a kid named Thatcher Demko who is amongst the best goaltending prospects of the game. It's his First year, he went Boston College. He's playing in Utica now. He's having a really good year. His first year as a pro in Utica. He's the goalie of the future, unless Markstrom. And Markstrom is a talented kid. If you're going to drop the specs for a modern NHL goalie, you'd get a guy who looks like Markstrom, who's 6'4", 220, and fairly athletic. Now, again, the question is, can he play 55, 60 games a year for a good team? And that's what they have to find out about him.
Ed, watching the game last night, noticed, a fair bit of empty seats in the arena. What's, just from your perspective, the pulse of the fan base of the Canucks these days?
Yeah, they've been through a lot here the last 3 years, and this isn't an entertaining team to watch. And quite frankly, they haven't really succeeded in selling the rebuild and selling the next group of young stars the way the Jets have. A lot of that has to do with where they picked in the draft. Some of it has to do with just bad luck. But the fans are kind of wait and see here. And this looks like this cycle for the Canucks is going to continue for another 2-3 years, I would say, before they can turn a corner, and unless they get incredibly lucky somewhere along the line. So it's a story in this market.
Ed, we'll let you go on this last question. It's sort of similar or on the same vein as Sean's previous question. Much was made of Trevor Linden's interview with the rival sports broadcast company, where he talked about not being able to go into the Canucks dressing room and telling Daniel and Henrik Sedin that they needed to strip down the team to its bare bones. He's saying, he's not fair that that Linden says it's not fair to Daniel and Henrik Sedin to do that to them. Obviously, that was got quite a reaction there in Vancouver. Was Trevor Linden wrong in his comments, or was he misconstrued, or does he truly think that this organization, this team, doesn't need to be stripped down like we've seen so many other teams sort of bottom out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I got fatigue over this question. I'd answer you this. What team could take on the Sedins at this stage in their career? They've got another year left at $7 million per each. So who is going to take? They're still decent players. They're not frontliners anymore. So how can they move them? And then I guess the other answer is you let those contracts expire. I think they still have value as mentors, as the supreme character players. They're the kind of guys you want in the organization. I think there have been mistakes made elsewhere. I think the Louis Erickson contract is going to be an albatross for this organization. I didn't like the Miller signing when it happened, and nothing's happened since to change my mind. But I think as far as Daniel and Henrik go, they're kind of bedrock Canucks, and they're going to stay here.
Ed, is there still a chance that they sign another contract, or is next year going to be the last year for the Sedins?
That's a good question. I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Like, Swedes tend to have a bit of a nesting instinct, and they don't like moving. And like these guys are Canucks. There's no doubt about that.
Ed Willis is a columnist for the Vancouver Province. Ed, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for doing this. All the best in 2017. Okay. Until we speak again.
Okay, guys. Best to you and yours again.
Take
Bye
care.
Now.
Thanks, Ed. Head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. When we come back, we'll talk about potential tweaks to the first round playoff format.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Philadelphia Flyers, boy, they're playing really good hockey too, and I've said it for a long time. I think the Flyers have been on the upward trajectory for several years with all those good young players. The goaltending has been great. I like all five of these teams, though. I think the Flyers, their best days are down the road a little bit more, and I would say the same for the Blue Jackets. I think the teams that are the now teams are still the Rangers, the Penguins, and the Cavs.
20 minutes after the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province for joining us. Still to come, Michael Trakos of Post Media, the National Post. He's going to join us in about 10 minutes' time. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to catch the game tomorrow night, Bernstein's Deli, great drink specials, big screen TVs, full volume, the whole nine yards. We'll wash it down with a couple of Legal Curve sandwiches. That's what I call a good night.
Great coleslaw also.
Yeah, some very good coleslaw. Potato salad too. Whole nine yards. You can't go wrong there.
I had latkes twice last weekend.
Really? I had latkes twice on Sunday, once on Monday, and then once tonight.
I'm the most jealous of both of you.
Yeah. Happy Hanukkah to you boys.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't start until the 24th.
Right, but you got to do it earlier because everybody's busy.
And we don't have a show before then.
That's right. So, yeah.
But, Drew, you know, I think the listeners would like to know, do you eat your latkes with sour cream?
Sour cream.
Applesauce?
Not an applesauce.
Never applesauce.
Sour cream.
I like applesauce. It's, like, unique and different. It's kind of, like, exotic, but I go sour cream, hot sauce combo.
Really? You got the hot sauce in there. That's me, yeah. That's sort of you. That's the non-traditional in you.
There you go.
Yeah, no, I'm a straight sour cream guy on my latkes.
The great thing about the Bernstein's latkes, and for our Hanukkah dinner on Friday night at my dad's place, we had Bernstein's latkes. And you don't even need sour cream. They're so good.
Yeah. You're right. The sour cream sometimes is unnecessary. It depends on the latke you have available to you.
I like to alternate on the plate. I like to put a little sour cream. And then on the other side of the plate, I like to put the applesauce.
Oh.
And then I alternate dipping in the sour cream and the applesauce.
Well, you certainly are a man of luxury in that sense of it. Interesting article from Larry Brooks in the New York Post. Actually, one thing before we get to this article.
Back to latkes?
No, not back to latkes, but back to the holiday roster freeze. Best I can tell, and I'm not a lawyer, but best I can tell is that you can activate a player off of your roster that's injured. So if you have a player who's injured, i.e. Sean Mathias, Joel Armia, you can activate those guys into your active roster during the holiday roster freeze, and you can send down a player at that point in time so that the roster freeze... you are allowed to make moves if they are required to maintain roster compliance.
So based on that, they might be able to send Alexander Burmistrov down to the Moose without clearing waivers.
Well, with Alex Burmistrov, it would be because he has... So anybody that has to clear waivers, you can't send them down, but you can loan them. Meaning he would then
it's
have...
It's essentially the same thing.
Well, except he would then have to clear waivers after the holiday roster freeze is lifted.
Automatically. Right.
But again, this is based on my... reading of very legalese, because God forbid this be written in any sort of normal person language. But that's best I can understand is that the Jets, if they want to activate Mathias and if they want to activate Armia in time for tomorrow's game, they can do so, and they can make the corresponding roster moves with it.
Right, and Drew, you're not a lawyer, and you're not a doctor, but you used to have the T-shirt that said, you're not a doctor, but you'll take a look.
That's very true, yes. I did have that T-shirt. It was a gift from my father, which is even creepier.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. So back to the Larry Brooks article. Larry Brooks in the New York Post, his typical Sunday column, which is always a very good read, talks about how the reward for finishing first overall in an NHL division is not significant enough right now. And he's using the Metropolitan as the example, which is in the midst of an absolute battle. It's just a chaotic battle between the Penguins, Rangers, Blue Jackets, Flyers, and Capitals, where these teams are... It's really so they've separated a little bit more, where it's the Penguins, the Rangers, and the Blue Jackets are fighting tooth and nail for first place in the Metropolitan Division. He's saying if they fight like this for 82 games, they're going to be spent, and that the reward under the current system is not enough. So what Larry Brooks proposes as a reward for all the division winners, so that if you win the division, you get 5 potential home games in the first round of the playoffs, and 2 road games.
That's not going to happen.
The system would be you'd play the first game at home, you'd play the next 2 games on the road, and then you would play the remaining games of the series, however many games are necessary, at home. Meaning that if it went 7 games, you would play 5 of those 7 on home ice and get the financial benefits of playing 5 home games as opposed to the current 4-3 split that you see.
Right, and
I think this is a great idea, but as y'all, we were talking about it off air, and you disagree.
Well, Larry Brooks is a great writer, first of all. He's been doing this for a long time now, and I think he has some validity, you know, to what he's bringing up here, but you know, how much are the Jets going to like it if they make the playoffs? They play a team that won the division, and they only get two home playoff dates in a best of seven series. I just don't think owners and GMs, more so the owners.
Well, the owners,
I don't think the owners will like it.
I think some of the owners will, because the some of the owners will get five home games,
the division,
potentially.
The division leading owners, yeah.
Right, but there's only four teams that'll get that.
Well, I know, but you need an incentive to play hard for all 82 games. And I honestly don't,
I think the playoff format is great. And by the way, I don't think that there should be a one-game
wild
card like there is in baseball. If that's the case, then, it just doesn't work in hockey.
The one-game wild card is stupid idea, because already there's too many teams. Think about how many teams make the playoffs in baseball versus how many teams make the playoffs in hockey.
Right.
If you can't be one of the top 16 teams in the NHL, you don't belong in the playoffs.
And there's 162 baseball games versus 82 hockey games.
Baseball, it works for baseball, it doesn't work for hockey. This works for hockey. You need an incentive to finish first overall in your division. And if you're an owner, the owner would love it. They would get five home games instead of four, potentially. The players would get to play a lot more games at home in a first-round playoff series.
How about instead of doing five games at home, how about you do something like 3-3-1?
Like, you play the first three games at home?
Right.
I can listen to that proposal. Mm-hmm.
I just think five games out of a seven-game series are at home. I mean,
what's the reward for finishing first?
Well, you get the first two games at home.
You play the eighth seed Anaheim Ducks.
In some instances, it's like, well, great. You play a wild card team that is, just been going through the motions. They've been coasting throughout the entirety of the season because they knew they'd be in the playoffs, and they don't really care about matchups. And so what? You get one extra home game? This way you get two extra home games from the current system. I think this is a great idea. I like this idea. I don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
Because, God forbid, the NHL think outside the box.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there is some validity to it,
yes.
And I think I would like to see it happen.
I wouldn't say it's a great idea. I think it's a decent idea.
It's intriguing.
Again, I don't see this happening. And, I don't really believe that there is this lack of motivation for teams to win the division. I mean, if you're talking about whether it's the St. Louis Blues or Chicago Blackhawks in the Central right now, or throw in the Minnesota Wild, who are actually second now in the Central, I mean, they want to win the division. Why do they want to win the division? Because they get guaranteed home ice throughout the playoffs.
I understand.
Well, that's if they win the conference, but
yeah, that's if they win the conference.
Right.
But, I mean, I understand your point, but I think you really have to make it more of an incentive. I mean, the idea I love best, and this is Eric DeHatchick's idea, and it's been his idea for many a year, is that whoever finishes first in the conference, and so this is going back to a top eight in the conference as opposed to the division format, whoever finishes best in the conference gets to choose their opponent, regardless of record. And then you do it for the second place team and the third place team, and then obviously the fourth and fifth place team.
I like that idea better.
That's an interesting idea.
I think that's a great idea.
I think that's been around for a while.
He's been banging that drum for a while.
Yeah.
I think it's obvious that that's also not going to happen. But to me, that's fascinating. If you finish, you're the best team in your conference, and you think that you match up better against the third place team than you do against the eighth place team, then that third place team gets all this extra motivation. The first place team gets who they, their preferred opponent. That is an idea that I would be totally on board with.
Or why not, Sean, just have all 16 teams and do a playoff lottery?
Like a random drawing?
Right.
Well, that's a little bit silly. There's no
then
reward
standings,
then for finishing
standings are
first.
Insignificant.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's obviously not
going to
happen.
I like the draft. I like the pick-your-poison idea, and the NHL would draw it out for a three-hour special, put it on TV.
So do it. I mean, they're going to say, you can't do it because of all the extra travel that's involved. Well, I mean, the extra travel isn't that significant. You're not talking about having a Western Conference team play an Eastern mm-hmm. Conference team in the first round of the playoffs. You're talking about, if the Chicago Blackhawks right now, who are the best team in the West, decide that they think they match up better against the Minnesota Wild than they do against the Los Angeles Kings, who they would right now be playing in the first round of the playoffs, let them pick the Wild.
I just don't think there's a problem. After the last lockout, they brought in the wild card.
Yeah.
So this is, the fourth year that they've had it?
Yeah, I think if my math squares with that.
Fourth or fifth year that they've had the wild card.
Yeah.
I think that's been great. That means that five teams from a division can get in, right? We've seen that the last couple of years in the Central. This year we're probably going to see it in the Metro Division. I just don't think that there's anything wrong. I mean, his article kind of presupposes that there's this problem with teams not having motivation in winning the division. I just don't think that problem exists as much as he thinks it does.
I think there's some teams, and I think we've seen some teams that in game 78,
I was going to say later in the season,
when it's clear that they're a playoff team, they take their foot off the gas a little bit.
Well, they want to rest some of their players. Right,
he's saying, you know, don't give teams the incentive to rest players. Make it more of an incentive for them to get that fifth home game in the first round or finish atop the conference to be able to choose your opponent. That's Eric DeHatchick's idea. I think there's ways to make the regular season more significant, and the NHL, which is always looking for a hook and always looking to stand out from the other major sports leagues, might be time for them to consider one of these hooks and embrace a slightly different way of going about their playoff format.
And I agree with you, but you look at last year, Boston and Detroit, right down to game 82, they were tied the same amount of points. Detroit got in because they had the tiebreaker. I'm just saying, I think the regular season is exciting right down to that last day.
For the final playoff spots, yes, but maybe for the top playoff spots, it could be more exciting.
I mean, those teams are going to get in regardless. It's just going to be, you know, whether, I guess, they're going harder towards the end of the season. But I don't know if anybody cares.
Well, I think that
You know that team's going to be in the playoffs anyways. Do you really need to see, you know, Detroit beat Columbus, at the end? I'm just using two random teams as an example.
I understand what you're saying. I don't know that you need to see it. I mean, I think that from the Red Wings' perspective or from the random team's perspective in your example, they have a motivation for playing hard for all 82, and that's extra home games in the first round or calling your shot and calling and being able to name your opponent. Food for thought. That's all it is.
Latkes for thought.
I was actually just going to say that.
Michael Trakos of the National Post is up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
A point of clarification before we bring in Michael Trakos of the National Post. People are tweeting at us, asking us what a latke is.
Oh, okay, yeah, this is fun.
A latke is a potato pancake. It's called a latke. I'm not sure, is that Yiddish or if that's Hebrew? I think it must be Yiddish.
I think it's Yiddish.
Yeah, so in Yiddish, a potato pancake is called a latke, and you eat them with sour cream, maybe applesauce, in Sean's case, hot sauce. So that, for those of you who are wondering what we were talking about last segment, a latke is a potato pancake.
Let's get Michael Trakos on, because I know he's had a latke.
And with that in mind, we're pleased to welcome to the program from the National Post and Post Media the 2016 winner of the Male IC Guest of the Year, Michael Trakos. Michael, before we get into the world of hockey, just take us through the emotions you felt when you found out that you won the award, the Ezzy, for IC Guest of the Year. I presume your first emotion was, what in God's name is an Ezzy?
Waiting for the check in the mail, too. Or maybe you guys are waiting for the check in the mail.
You're going to be waiting a long time for that check in the mail, let me tell you. And even if it comes, don't cash it. It's going to bounce.
Yeah, waiting for the gift certificate for Tim Hortons or something. Yeah. At least. Come on, boys.
And it's going to be expired.
But thanks very much. Thanks again for having me on. You guys are great supporters of my work here at the Post and Post Media. So I always appreciate it. I love talking hockey, and I love talking food with you guys as well. Yeah. I always think to jump in as you guys are talking about either a sandwich at a deli you discovered, or in this case, a potato pancake, which I call, I think, a rosti or roasty.
Yeah. Okay, that would work as well. Yeah, okay. And if you ever come to Winnipeg, we will take you for the Illegal Curve sandwich at the deli, but I suppose that's a separate issue altogether. Michael, obviously brought you on to talk about the world of hockey. You're going to be covering the World Juniors coming up in, Boxing Day, so about 5 days away from now, and happy holidays to you and yours, of course. You know, this World Junior Tournament, back in the Toronto-Montreal region for the second time in the last 3 years, is there any buzz at all about this tournament, particularly in Toronto, where you're based the majority of the time?
It's hard to get a buzz. I think going for World Juniors, anything non-elite seems to die in Toronto. And I think it's even more so the case in Montreal, where attendance was just abysmal a couple years ago for that portion of the tournament. So, yeah, without the star power of a McDavid or even a Mitch Marner this time around, I expect the ticket sales or just kind of interest to kind of wane, especially with just how interesting the Leafs are right now. They got the outdoor game happening on New Year's Day as well, so there's a lot of competition. And, you know, the Leafs have their own kind of World Juniors going right now, and I guess Winnipeg is kind of in the same boat in that regard. So to draw fans out to see Dylan Strome and a bunch of guys that were probably are probably not destined for stardom in the NHL is going to be a tough sell.
Michael, do you think it's a good thing that they decided in 2019 to go to Vancouver and Victoria?
I think so. I think the more places you can spread it out in Canada, the better. I wish that they would just kind of go to Europe a little bit more as well. I was fortunate to go to Helsinki last year, and the buzz around Finland, and maybe it was due to, in part because of how good that Finnish team was, and they ended up winning the tournament really on the eve of a national holiday, which just lined up perfectly for a lot of drunk Finns. But the buzz in Helsinki was just huge. And for years I had been told that, oh, no one outside of Canada cares about this tournament. It's a TSN product, and it's a creation of media, and really outside of Canada, no one really gives a care about this thing, and that's not true. In Europe, they really did care about it, and there's a lot of Russians, Swedes, and even Slovakians. Everyone was at that tournament, and they're bringing their cowbells and dressed in funny costumes. So it was a great atmosphere. I don't think we get that same kind of flavor when it's in Canada. So to answer your question, I think it's great that they're going to different places versus Toronto and Montreal and Ottawa and that region. We'll see how it goes out there out west, because in Toronto, I just don't see the level of excitement that we have in years past.
Michael, we want to get to the NHL with you, but, you know, on the topic of the World Juniors, you're going to be in Montreal for the World Junior Tournament, which obviously starts on Boxing Day like it does every year. When you consider that the Finns, who won it last year, they're not going to have Patrick Laine and some of the other players that that were responsible for their success last year, and Canada was knocked out in the quarterfinals by Finland, is it safe to say that Canada should expect to, if not win it, have a better showing this year?
Yeah, I would think there's three really top contending teams. Canada, obviously, is always a contender, regardless of what they did last year. But Sweden is coming back with a real veteran-laden team, so much so that the number two overall prospect going into next year's draft wasn't able to make the team. And then the U.S. has a really strong team, full of a lot of dynamic scorers that can do some damage. So those three teams, I expect one of them should win the gold medal. And yet, Finland, last year we were saying that they were too young of a team to compete, and that now was not their time. And they had a lot of interesting players, but they're just too darn young. And when I look at that roster, look at the Finland's roster this year, there's a lot of similarities. Like, they've got this kid, Eli Tolvanen, who's going to be a first-round pick. A lot of people are saying that he's just a smaller version of Patrick Laine, in the sense that he just scores from everywhere. He's such a dynamic player. And Olli Juolevi, the Vancouver prospect, who was a tournament all-star last year on defense, he's captaining the team. So they do have a lot of interesting pieces there. It's just a matter of is it going to happen for them next year, or these young kids, like how we saw last year, are they able to kind of take that step?
Michael, just you have a really interesting read here on seven NHL players making up for lost time. Reading this in the National Post website here, and front and center, a picture of Austin Matthews. You know, his skill is unbelievable. Kind of a two-part question for you. Did you see the goal he scored with the one-handed backhand tip on the ice?
That was beautiful.
Well, yeah, I was like, what? Like, how, have you ever seen anything like that? Or what was the talk around, you know, fellow media members just regarding that goal and the insane skill it requires?
Well, Austin Matthews, and I've had the pleasure of covering him at World Juniors, World Championships, World Cup, and now with the Leafs. He does things every day, whether it's in practice or in games, that just kind of makes you just kind of like shake your head going, my God, did you see that? And Mitch Marner is the same kind of thing, and William Nylander is also in that kind of category. But yeah, to get a one-handed tip, and it wasn't just kind of like he stuck a stick out and the puck just happened to hit it and take a crazy deflection. Like he kind of finessed it with one hand. I think on the broadcast they said like velvet hands of Austin Matthews, and it was very much like that. Like it was almost like the puck was an egg, and the way that Matthews kind of corralled it, the egg wouldn't have broken. The way how softly he kind of just kind of nudged it and redirected it. So, yeah, he's a special talent, and even more so than the offense. You just see him matching up against Ryan Getzlaff, and he factors into the equation offensively and defensively. He's averaging something like 5 shots per game, which is just completely unreal. And I know Patrick Laine is just putting up just silly numbers offensively with his goal total, but Matthews is right there behind him, and he's playing a position, really, it's a harder position as a young player at center. And now with Tyler Bozak out, nursing a lower body injury, and Ben Smith, their fourth-line center, out, you know, Austin Matthews is going to be leaned on for even more difficult matchups, especially when they go out on the road now.
Michael Trakos of the National Post is our guest here on NHL This Week. Michael, an article that comes out from under your name, it's on the Toronto Sun website as of about a few hours ago, I presume it'll be in the paper tomorrow, is about the NHL and its and sort of hockey in China and search for the first big Chinese hockey player that'll allow the NHL to really tap into that market.
Hockey's Yao Ming,
that's sort of the basis or the thought process behind the article. And we've talked so much about the Olympics and how it's clear the NHL wants to go to Beijing in 2022, but they don't want to go to South Korea in 2018. Are they overlooking the impact that the South Korea Olympics might have in China? You know, if the NHL players are there, are they overlooking that will actually still have an effect on you know, the Chinese marketplace? And are they so sort of short-sighted and not seeing the proximity between South Korea and China will still have tremendous ramifications, positive ramifications, for growing the sport in China?
100%. And thanks for mentioning the story. It's actually a two-part series with 3 different stories. It kind of kicks off in the papers tomorrow and Friday. And I guess the Sun just got to jump on it. They posted it already.
We want to recommend that people purchase the newspaper rather than just reading the article online for free. Go out. It reads so much better when you can actually hold the paper in your hands.
There you go. And you get the ink stains on your fingers. That's right. Also lovely. But, yeah, a lot of work went into this in terms of just talking to various Canadians working in Asia, not just China, but like you mentioned, Korea, Japan, Taiwan, and I agree with you. The second part of the story is just basically like why the NHL wants to go to the Olympics in Beijing. And really, they should be wanting to go to not just Beijing, but they should want to go to South Korea. And Japan is making a serious bid for the Olympics right after Beijing. So it could be a trifecta there where Asia really gets a kickstart. And the NHL, obviously, going to South Korea would be a huge boon. Like, what's his name? Jim Peck, former NHLer who played for Pittsburgh, won a cup with the Penguins. He's the director of hockey for Korea Ice Hockey Association, and he's the head coach of the national team. Ever since they got the bid back in, I think, 2011, he really started kickstarting the infrastructure and introducing kind of can skate programs for the youngsters and revamping the national team programs. And already you're seeing the kind of impact on that where South Korea's men's and women's teams are ranked 23rd in the world, which is not that high. But when you think about the population that they have and the fact that it's a non-traditional hockey market, like this is a country that basically just produces short track speed skaters and not much else in terms of the winter landscape. It is huge, and if NHLers go there and it convinces more kids to pick up the sport, all the better. And KHL is already in Beijing with the first ever Chinese KHL team, and while that team's kind of slowly getting off the ground and guys like Alexei Ponikrovsky are playing for that team, the Olympics going to Asia, and think of it not just as Beijing or South Korea, but all of Asia, which is such a huge, huge untapped market. It really has the same effect that the NBA has right now in that market.
Michael, Alexei Ponikarovsky, former excellent Winnipeg Jet and Toronto Maple Leaf. I'm glad that you brought him up. I wanted to ask you about the Columbus Blue Jackets. Michael, as you know, they're really the biggest story in the NHL right now. They've won 10 games in a row. That Metropolitan Division is arguably now the best division in all of hockey. Now that they've played 30 games, is it safe to say that the Columbus Blue Jackets are for real?
Ooh, you're going to get me in trouble with either the guys on Twitter who are huge proponents of advanced stats, or if I say the if I agree with them and say that this is a mirage, then you're going to get me in trouble with the entire state of Ohio.
Best goal differential in the entire league.
It is crazy. It reminds me a lot of what kind of Toronto was doing, I guess, several years ago under Randy Carlyle, where they had a save percentage that was just, everyone was saying, was not sustainable, and they had a shooting percentage that everyone was saying was not sustainable. And lo and behold, there was a massive, massive kind of fall off a cliff moment for that team. And I don't know if it's going to happen with Columbus because we are so far along. And what is it now, 10 straight wins for this team? Something like that?
Yeah, I think it is just, yes, 10 straight but wins. 10-0 in their last 10.
Yeah, the one litmus test, I don't know how strong this is, but I always think, or I always look at goal differential. You mentioned the plus 38 goal differential. I always think, like, the teams that have a minus differential right now, and Ottawa and Boston are two teams that are just kind of with a minus right now in the East. Those are the ones you got to be worried about. It seems like the ones with the positive goal differential, those are always the playoff teams. It seems like just one or two that end up making the playoffs with a negative or a minus in that regard. So, I don't know. When you got a goaltender like Sergei Bobrovsky, and it seems like John Tortorella is mellowed and he's pushing all the right buttons there, maybe this team can get it done. I don't know if they're a Stanley Cup contender. I still think they're one of those teams that might make the playoffs a la Colorado Avalanche a few years ago and be primed for kind of a first-round sweep. But, well, we'll see. Right now, it's been really the story of the year in the sense that no one was picking this team for the playoffs, and yet, lo and behold, this is a team in one of the hardest divisions in hockey that is just kind of tearing it up.
Michael, we've been we've been having a lot of fun talking Jaromir Jagr here at the station today. He ties Messier yesterday with points second to all time. You know, you've been covering the sport for quite some time. I'm just curious, you know, hate to put you on the spot like this, but what's your favorite or maybe your first real memory of Jaromir Jagr, either in the NHL or prior? I'm just curious from your perspective.
Oh boy, this is a great moment, but I just remember being like a young reporter, I guess more than 10 years ago, and walking into a Rangers dressing room while on the road with the Leafs, and Jagr was taking off his equipment, and I remember just marveling, going, holy crap, that is the biggest butt I've ever seen on a human being in hockey. Never mind hockey, this is the biggest butt I've ever seen in anyone.
This is pre-Kardashian
like
days, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I just remember saying, like, oh, that's why you can't get the puck off when it's down low. Like, you just stick that thing out, and there you go. But he's a great person to talk to. As good as he is on the ice, and he just seems like he's having the time of his life. He's like that off the ice when he's talking with us in the dressing room. And teammates just love the guy. And you can't mention Jagr without the mullet, so. He's one of those guys that when I was just a fan of the game and collecting hockey cards, I remember always wanting a Jagr card and just kind of marveling at what he was able to do with the puck as a Pittsburgh Penguin.
I don't know if it's anything like in your family, Michael, but a little more holiday season as we're approaching. My butt might be as big as Jagr's after all that, after all the food we're consuming.
Here you go. You're on your way to the NHL, buddy.
Yeah. Michael Tracos from the National Post from Post Media. He's a columnist for them. Michael, always appreciate your time. Happy holidays to you and yours, and we'll chat again in 2017.
There you go. I got to keep up my my word there. I got to win back to back there. So give me a shout in 2017. That's for sure, boys. Thanks very much.
The prestige knows no bounds of winning an Ezzy. That's for sure.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. We'll talk to you soon. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And going back to McDavid, you know, just getting an opportunity to play with one of the best players, I would say, of this time.
The appeal of playing with Connor McDavid brought Milan Lucic to the Edmonton Oilers this offseason. Has it sparked a renaissance regarding Canada in the eyes of NHLers? That's the theory put forth by Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail in another one of his interesting columns. Talk about that next. This segment, of course, brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So Eric Dehatchik, good friend of the program, frequent guest, says that with the skill players that are now playing on Canadian teams,
yep,
Connor McDavid in Edmonton, Patrick Laine here in Winnipeg, Austin Matthews in Toronto, Carey Price in Montreal.
Yeah, Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, Sam Bennett.
Sean Monahan in Calgary.
Yep.
Maybe less so in Vancouver and less so in Ottawa. But
yeah,
Vancouver,
Carlson.
Yeah, Vancouver was still able to get Louis Erickson this offseason. Is Canada, which maybe 5 years ago was a no-go for potential free agents, is Canada and Canadian hockey teams now more desirable than they have been in the recent history of the NHL?
It's a very good question, Drew, and a great article by Eric Dehatchik. Every article that Eric Dehatchik writes is a great one. He's in the Hall of Fame for writing. And here in Winnipeg, guys, we've heard this for years. Since the Jets came back and before the Jets came back for the Jets 1.0, we've heard that Winnipeg is not a preferred destination for hockey players. Well, when the Jets drafted Patrick Laine second overall, I think that changed a little bit. And I think with the success of Mark Scheifele and Nikolaj Ehlers over the last couple of years, Scheifele developing into a number one elite center, I think it has changed here in Winnipeg, and I think it has changed in Edmonton with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Jesse Puljujärvi and now Milan Lucic going over there. I mean, Milan Lucic said one of the reasons he went over to Edmonton, in addition, Drew, to being close to BC, his home province, was because of Connor McDavid, arguably the best player in the world. He's leading the league in points right now. So, yes, Drew, you know, to answer your question, you know, pretty bluntly, I do think Canada is becoming more of a hockey destination for hockey players, whether that's free agents or you know, maybe players not having that in their no movement clauses. And that's because a lot of these Canadian teams now are getting the high-end elite talent. And this is a great thing for Canada and Canadian hockey fans.
So the era of Chris Pronger demanding a trade from Edmonton because they didn't like the city anymore is a bygone era, in your opinion. Sean, do you agree with Ezzy, or do you think it's maybe the cases of Lucic and Erickson might be more one-offs than they are sort of a full-course change in mentality by NHL players?
No, I agree with Ezzy. I think that the lure to play with the premier players around the league is a very, very strong proponent of switching teams and leaving a city that or a team that you're comfortable with, that you've developed a relationship within the community. Milan Lucic was in LA for, I believe, 10 years.
No, he was in LA for
Boston. And he says in that, it's interesting, he says in the article that the Boston Cup was so special because they built it together and, you know, they kind of the nucleus of the team kind of grew together, and then when they won that cup, it was such a special feeling that he would never trade that for another feeling. And these guys, you know, these premier athletes, they're proud people, and they're also a little bit of egomaniacs.
Sure.
And you know what better way to pump your ego than to come to a city and win a city that hasn't won a championship in God knows how long, bring a cup to that city and be a hero among the entire population.
And I think it's a good point, Sean, and it's not just Canadian players, I think, that are starting to look at Canadian teams and those being good destinations for them. Milan Lucic is obviously Canadian. Mm-hmm. Louis Erickson isn't, but when you look at Toronto, Austin Matthews, you know, the greatest American player in the game right now, greatest young American player in the game right now, mm-hmm. you don't think if you're an American player and, you know, you have the option in a couple years to pick between, let's say, Toronto and Las Vegas, you're probably going to look at Toronto and you're going to say, hey, well, you know, I've gone through the U.S. National Development Program, you know, with a guy like Austin Matthews. Maybe I'll go and play with him in Toronto. So it's not just Canadian players that I think are starting to maybe want to return back to play for a Canadian team. It's American players. When you're talking about Louis Erickson, it's Swedish players. Finnish players with Patrick Laine. You don't think there are Finnish players around the NHL that would love to come here in Winnipeg and play with one of the greatest scorers in the game? I think things are changing.
I agree. And another aspect, regardless of region and origin, you know, where you were born, and is your skill set. Like, let's say you're a playmaker, right? Let's say you're a playmaker, you're approaching 30, 29, 30, 31. You want to kind of, you haven't won a cup. You want to kind of, you want to have a chance to compete for Lord Stanley. You see a guy like Patrick Laine, you notice something, maybe a tendency or something on the ice that isn't being taken advantage of. I feel that if you're a playmaker, why wouldn't you want to play with a trigger man like that? I feel like maybe skill sets kind of mix and match around the league too, as opposed to just, you know, where you originate from.
And at the end of the day, Sean, hockey players want to play for teams that win.
Exactly.
And Detroit won year after year after year, and that's why everybody wanted to go play in Detroit. With all due respect to Detroit,
yeah.
Detroit is not one of the great American cities.
No, it's nope. it's run into some hard times.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not knocking on Detroit. I'm
but
just saying
it's not a vacation destination.
It's not New York. It's not L.A. Yeah. It's not Chicago. It's, you know, it's not one of the big, you know, great centers that everybody wants to go to. Okay. Detroit had great teams run by the Ilitch family and Ken Holland. They've always done a great job. People wanted to go there. Players wanted to go there, I should say.
Sure.
Because they knew they had a good chance at winning the cup.
You're absolutely right.
And to play with Nick Lidstrom.
That certainly didn't hurt matters, mm-hmm. but time will tell to see if it's a one-off or it's a new pattern that we can track here in the NHL. Let's go to break. We're well over time, so we need to do that. When we come back, we'll talk about the Dallas Stars and what ails the team of Texas. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
The story's going to have to change by our top players being in on the score sheet night after night. You know, and I think that's been kind of the main theme that they've had. Even last night, that our top guys had two or three great opportunities, but didn't put it away. So if you want to change the story, it's going to have to be, you know, on a consistent basis that those players get on the board for us.
Dallas Stars head coach Lindy Ruff lamenting the lot of his team, a Stanley Cup pick by a lot of people. After last year's Central Division Championship, the Dallas Stars certainly struggling through the first 30-35 games of the 2016-17 NHL season. Welcome back to NHL This Week, this segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. You are now officially 10 days away from New Year's Eve. And if you're looking for a place with which to ring in the new year, I would strongly recommend Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. They're going to have two shows. There's going to be one at 6:30 p.m. if you're more on the early side of things, if you want to get your New Year's Eve off to a laughing start. And then there's going to be a later show That's at 10:15. There's going to be party favors and champagne at midnight. So rumorscomedyclub.com. Purchase your tickets now. Don't miss out. Speaking of hilarious things, Ezzy, last on Saturday's program, right after Saturday's show, you were heading for a pedicure. How was that?
I got to say, it was lovely.
It was lovely. Good. You enjoyed your pedicure.
Yeah, it was very nice. It was a lot shorter than I thought it was going to be.
Uh-huh.
It lasted only about, I don't know, 30, 35 minutes.
And you expected it would take how long exactly to
I don't know.
Heal
I'd,
with your feet?
I'd never had one before, Drew, so I thought it might be, I don't know, an hour. The one thing that I did find, you know, a little bit, you know, weird or I didn't really know what to do is they don't really give you fair warning as far as when you're supposed to put your feet in that little bath and when you're supposed to straighten your feet out and stuff, because I didn't really know what was going on.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're filing and they're mixing and rubbing. And but afterwards, I got to say, Drew, I mean, your feet feel fantastic after. It's almost like you feel lighter. And
walking on sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was very enjoyable. We had a great time, did a little shopping after. We actually went to Bed Bath & Beyond. I'm not even joking.
Come on.
Then I realized I was in a very serious relationship.
I mean, you're living with somebody, so that would have been your first clue, I think, earlier than that, is that you were actually living with somebody.
Yeah.
So
sometimes
that
I,
might have been
I
your first giveaway.
Yeah, I don't know how
but
Naomi lives with me sometimes, but we do.
You stepped your relationship up to a whole new level prior to the show tonight. You're heading on a vacation this coming weekend.
Yep.
So that you're off to a warm climate.
Yeah, that's the reason why we got the pedicure. Because I'm going to be wearing the sandals a lot.
And
yeah, so I needed a bit of a trim up.
Right. And so in addition, you'll wear the sandals. And so in addition, you're going to be shirtless a fair bit on this vacation.
Yeah. Which probably isn't a good thing for the rest of the people.
It's like watching a shaved bear. You had your back waxed prior to the show. Or your back nared, I should say, to be more accurate, prior to the show tonight.
Yeah, I told you not to bring that up on air.
You knew that once you told me that, it was 100% coming up on air.
Yeah, so, I mean, about an hour before the show, yes, my back was nared by Naomi.
Mm-hmm.
And it's burning right now.
It's burning right now.
It's been burning for the last, since we started the show and before when I was driving here to do the show.
Yeah.
I've never had my back waxed. I'm a very hairy guy.
Very hairy.
And we didn't bother doing the chest because, I mean, let's be honest, we have to cut it off somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, my back was waxed, nared, and like I said, I think it looks better than it did before. I have very patchy back hair. Like some people just have that, you know, that back fur. But mine is very patchy. The lower, I kind of get those left and right, you know, patches, like those wings. So, I mean, I think it looks better. But again, it burns.
Yeah, is that what that smell is?
Drew,
you
told me you've had your back nared back in the day. So you're married now, so you don't have to worry about it.
No, I never had my back nared. I had my back waxed by a professional.
Right. Well, Naomi's a professional.
Well, she's not. She's a teacher. She's not an esthetician. So, I mean, she might be, I mean, she's certifiable for having to put up with you all the time. But that's, I mean, she's a lovely person. But, I mean.
Well, I think she did a good job.
I'm sure she did a fine job.
I was being a bit of a baby. But, hey, maybe, you know, for anybody who's had, you know, their skin nared, I mean, it burns a little bit.
Well, I've never had my skin there. So
especially me. I've got very sensitive skin. I have to use a lot of different products.
So you use a lot of ointments, oils,
like
and things of that nature.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have an aloe vera to put on to maybe soothe the skin after the show?
I don't know. I might just do like a cold shower or something.
I see. You're just going to sit in an ice bath for the next 8 days or something along those lines. Dallas Stars. I mean, God help us for that segment. But the Dallas Stars were a...
Has anybody on the Dallas Stars had their back nared?
Probably. But they were a preseason favorite. And here
I picked the Dallas Stars to win the cup back in September.
Well, there you go. Here we are through 34,
that's looking like a great pick.
34 games this year, and they only have 33 points. They're 13, 14, and 7 on the season. Fifth in the Central Division.
Yeah, Drew, and they lost last night to the St. Louis Blues in overtime.
Yeah.
And one of the defensemen that they really expected more out of this year, Esa Lindell, was the guy who coughed up the puck to Jaden Schwartz, and then David Perron scored on the wraparound. But, I mean, this Stars team right now, it's very perplexing why this team isn't better. And, you know, you can point to the goaltending and Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi have not been spectacular.
Worst team save percentage in the NHL, yep. .898 is their team save percentage.
Right, and they have a lot of money invested in those two goaltenders, and they've tried to spin it in various ways, you know, splitting the starts and all of that. But you look at some of the injuries that they've had, Cody Eakin, Patrick Sharp, Jason Spezza, Yuri Hudler. I mean, it goes on and on and on. I mean, this team has faced a lot of injuries this year, but so have the Jets, so have many other teams, so you can't use that as an excuse. I just don't think they're good enough defensively, Sean. And you look at some of the defensemen they've lost. Alex Goligoski is one of them. Jason Demers is another one of them. John Klingberg has not been as good as he was last year when he, what did he score, 53 points or something like that last year, Drew. Chris Russell, I think they miss. So guys like Esa Lindell and Steven Johns and Jamie Oleksiak have kind of had to fill in for those guys, and they've struggled a little bit. So I don't think they're a very good defensive team. I don't think they're very good in goal. And I don't think there's enough secondary scoring. I mean, how many points does Cody Eakin have this year? I love Cody Eakin, but he's suspended right now. But I think he's got, 1 point in 11 games? So, I mean, Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, these guys are having pretty decent years. Patrick Eves is having a decent year. They've got some guys that can put the puck in the net. But when you look up and down this roster, there are a lot of guys that are underperforming.
If you're Lindy Ruff and you're Jim Neal, general manager of the Dallas Stars, you probably aren't going to be able to both solve your defense and your goaltending issue. Which one is more of a priority right now as we get closer to the NHL trade deadline?
Goaltending. Look at what Calgary did last year. And I realize Chad Johnson has kind of usurped Brian Elliott there, but, I mean, they got to get a goalie in there. I don't care if it's Marc-Andre Fleury, Ben Bishop, or we talked about it with Ed Willis. Maybe you get Ryan Miller in there. I mean, they have to get that goaltending figured out, but the problem is, how are they getting one of those contracts out of there? You got to move Kari Lehtinen or Antti Niemi, because what do you have tied up there? $11 million with two goalies?
Right. You do have they do have the big salaries. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they both come off the books after the season, though.
Right.
So, I mean, as you get closer to the trade deadline, a lot of teams end up having more cap space. So you might have to get somebody. Actually, pardon me, they're still both under contract next year as well.
Right.
The problem is you can't.
They only have to protect one.
They only have to protect one, right? But you can't wait for these contracts to expire or anything else. Nobody's taking that contract on. It doesn't matter. The Las Vegas team isn't taking one of those two goaltenders because their salary is huge and their performance is minuscule. So those guys, the Stars are going to be saddled with those guys.
$10.1 million tied up in Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you can't just keep waiting for them to bounce back, or you're waiting for their contracts to expire, because they're missing out on the prime years of some of their, you know, Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn. I mean, those guys, you know, Jamie Benn's getting, he's not old by any stretch, but he's getting into his late 20s. Patrick Sharp, you know, he's in mid-30s at this point. Jason Spezza, mid-30s. It can't keep being next year while you wait for your goaltending or defense to get better in Dallas.
No, I mean, Jim Neal, he can't make a move right now, Drew, because there's a roster freeze. But I think he absolutely has to make a move, you know, in the next month or so, well before the trade deadline. I mean, this team right now is, what, 1 or 2 points behind the Winnipeg Jets. They've got a game in hand, I believe. But, I mean, they're struggling right now. They have to start picking up wins. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, some of the players that are struggling. I mean, Jason Spezza is still a great number two center behind Tyler Seguin. And Cody Eakin, when he's healthy and producing, is a great third-line center. But, I mean, they just need to get, I think, better results from some of the guys that are paid the big money on this team to score. And, you know, can Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn be better? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But that's not the reason why this team is struggling. It's in goal and it's on defense. So I think Jim Neal does have some work to do.
We'll keep an eye on the Dallas Stars. I do think they'll be an active team, and I expect trades will start to heat up once we're through to the start of 2017.
They're going
to
trade for a goalie.
January and February should get a little bit busier. Some quick news out of the Manitoba Junior Hockey League before we go to break. This coming courtesy of your friend Philip Paul Martin at the Native Hockey News. The OCN Blizzard, the Opisquia Cree Nation Blizzard, have announced that this will be their last season in the Manitoba Junior Hockey League.
That's unfortunate. Jordan Tutu played for them.
Yes, very unfortunate. That was a team, I believe they did win the MJHL
yep.
championship.
Yep. More than once.
Yes, more than once, right at the beginning of their stint in the MJHL. So that announcement coming about 25 minutes or so ago, the OCN Blizzard will cease to exist in the MJHL after this season. I think you might hear some more news, some more ramifications coming from that in the coming days. When we come back, we talk about the greatness and the legacy of Jaromir Jagr, who tied Mark Messier for second all-time in the NHL point list. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Here's Jager. Bjugstad on the line with Barkov. Bjugstad scores his first of the year. Barkov set him up. Jaromir Jager, the second assist on the goal. He is now tied for second all-time with Mark Messier.
1,887 points for Jaromir Jager as he ties Mark Messier for second on the NHL's all-time scoring list. We'll, of course, have an opportunity to break the great Messier's record coming up the next time the Panthers are in action. Welcome back to NHL This Week. One final segment on this Wednesday evening. It's brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Perhaps you have a Washington Capitals Jaromir Jagr jersey, or a New Jersey Devils Jaromir Jagr jersey, or a Pittsburgh Penguins Jaromir Jagr jersey,
or a KHL Jaromir Jagr jersey.
Who he played for in the KHL? I was wondering about
Dynamo Minsk.
I don't know. You're guessing.
The Flyers and the Stars.
Yeah, you know, he's been around there. The Bruins. Maybe you have a Bruins Jaromir Jagr jersey. Go to Keener Jerseys, check them out, 982 Portage Avenue. Beautiful new showroom. They can get that jersey personalized. They can get it however you want it. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Think of how many more points he would have if he didn't spend those 3 years in the KHL.
If he didn't lose two seasons or, you know, I think it would probably one full season and two half seasons to the lockout. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would have a tremendous number of points.
He still wouldn't pass Gretzky,
no,
but he'd be closer to Gretzky.
I mean,
he'd be past 2,000.
He would be past 2,000.
Well,
but then
past 2,000.
I mean, with Messier, you have to say, you know, what happens if some of his WHA points had been able to transfer over? So, although you'd say the same thing about Gretzky, of course, also. It doesn't matter.
Messier played in the WHA.
Sure he did.
Did he?
Yeah,
he
played with...
One year?
He would have played, yeah, I think 1 year in the WHA. Maybe two. I'd have to double check. But, I mean, Jaromir Jagr's career has been an absolute fantastic career. And his second stage of his career since returning back from the KHL.
Drew, he played for Omsk Avangard.
Ah, Omsk. And I'll tell you what, if you have a Jaromir Jagr Omsk jersey, kudos to you. You're doing a great job with your jersey collection at that point in time.
He actually played 4 years in the KHL.
Sure.
One in the Czech League. That was during the lockout. He played one half of the season in the Czech League, then one half in the Russian League. Four seasons, essentially, because you mentioned the lockout year.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm. He'd have a tremendous number of points.
And he owns the team in the Czech League.
It would make sense.
Yeah.
You can certainly afford to buy it at that point.
He said he wants to go back there when he's done in the NHL, play till he's 50.
Well, you know what? He can play in the NHL till he's 50.
Sean Jagr actually owns the Czech Republic.
He can. Him and Hasek, they own it together. But, I mean, there's the way he's still able to perform. And sure, he's lost a step, but he's so smart, and he's in such good shape, and he prides himself so much on it. I mean, Jaromir Jagr truly is a testament to an athlete who does everything in his power to stay at a professional level. He's not as dynamic as he was when he was, you know, quote-unquote a kid.
Messier played 51 games in the WHA.
See, I knew I was right. But this is about Jaromir Jagr that we're talking about.
Yeah, but I was fact-checking.
Thank you.
I mean, we saw what happened with, you know, in the presidential debates.
Yeah, they fact-checked still. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I just don't think they fact-checked.
No. People fact-checked.
No, I mean, the Clinton and Trump campaigns didn't fact-check.
Well, I mean, I think the people who voted for president-elect didn't care about facts.
Let's make Illegal Curve great again, Drew.
Yeah, we are still great. I think more segments about, you know, waxing your back will only make us better. How were the Ezzies?
They were great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 2016 Ezzies. I won an Ezzy. I'm proud for best block and unblock on Twitter for the year where you and I continued blocking each other.
Well, that's because a couple of weeks ago I said I was going to block you, and then before I could block you, you blocked me. Anyways, Drew, let's talk about Jagr.
Well,
I mean, our ratings are already down after that Nair segment.
Go ahead. I'm listening. You know, what about Jagr stands out to you the most?
Well, I mean, we talked to Michael Trakos about it a couple of segments ago here. I mean, this is a guy that came into the NHL in the early 90s and won a Stanley Cup, two Stanley Cups early on in his career. I mean, this is a top five player of all time, and he's obviously second in points. But we're talking about arguably the greatest European player of all time. I mean, it's basically him or Solani, as far as I'm concerned. And, I mean, this guy, you know, we just mentioned it at 44 years old. He's still having multi-point games. So I think now we have to start talking about, you know, is he going to play not only one more year, but maybe two, three, four more years? Because certainly there are no signs that he's going to retire. So, I mean, one of the greatest scorers of all time. I think, you know, whenever you get a chance to see him live, it's a treat for fans. Mm-hmm. We just saw him here in Winnipeg with the Florida Panthers rolling into town.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a class act. And I mean, he's just been a treat to watch year after year. You know, he continues to produce.
He's come such a long way because he always had a bit of a reputation back in the day of being a little petulant, maybe, or a little bit of a brat or whatever it was. He's come a long way from that era, and he's really truly the elder statesman in the NHL right now.
I had no problem with the Jaeger salute, Sean.
Oh, no, it's amazing. It's amazing, especially with the hair flowing out of the helmet. Yeah. And
he had flash in an era where NHL players weren't known for their flash.
Frank Cervelli is going to have a piece on him tomorrow, I believe. We had him on HNL today about tying Messier. And if you check out Frank Cervelli's Twitter timeline, he was at the game yesterday.
Sure.
TSN's Frank Cervelli.
Yeah.
Rolled out of the Florida Panthers BB&T Center at 12:24 Eastern Time. Jager still there working out alone. Game ended at 10:30.
He's a machine.
You remember in Philly when he said he would sign there if they only gave him the key to the workout facility and the rink, and the janitors would see him working out with weighted vests late at night?
Well, you know, it's good that you brought that up, Sean, because I mean, last year in the playoffs, Jager struggled. Right, and the Panthers lost in the first round, and he said that he was going to work on his fitness in the offseason. He came back, and Tom Rowe was talking about this today. I mean, he said Jager looks faster, and he looks in better shape. And so, even at 44 years old, I mean, he's right there with guys that are half of his age, 19, 20, 21-year-olds, and he's keeping up with these guys.
Well, and maybe when he's finally ready to retire in the NHL, he can join Vinny Viola and become like an Army Ranger or something now that Vinny's going to be the Secretary of the Army. And it's never a dull moment there with the Florida Panthers, eh? Ain't that the truth? You know, from the coaching to the cabinet, I suppose. That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. A programming note, we're off until New Year's Eve. Ezzy, you'll be back on New Year's Eve to get you ready for the Jets and the Islanders. But for the next 10 days, we're going to take a little bit of us time, a little bit of family time. So from our family here at Illegal Curve to your family, happy holidays and Merry Christmas and a happy Hanukkah for all those that celebrate the respective holiday season. Big thank you to our guests tonight, Michael Trakos and Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province. A big shout out to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. For producer Rory doing a great job, for Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday, December 31st, we wish you Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and thanks for listening to NHL This Week, live on TSN 1290.